Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby. On Joe, together with our friends at Guinness, we've got the professor of rugby in these parts, budding rugby journalist I keep hearing on the shows that you've been doing with Baz. How's
I've
tricks?
Never been referred to as a professor of rugby.
I like to make people feel very comfortable in the early parts of these
things. I feel extremely comfortable now.
Good.
Thank you.
Away we go.
You really put me at ease.
Good. I'm obviously not Baz. I'm an imposter and a bit of a work experience kid. I think I've been sent over to sort of from London to see how we should be doing it in these Dublin parts.
I'm not sure. That's very kind of you to say that, but it feels like in mini rugby, whenever the best player from the good team kind of comes over to our team and shows us how to do it. So thanks.
There's too much love, I think.
Thanks
in the
for the help.
There's
going to be no slagging here.
No. We'll be very gentle. We'll get going nicely.
But I've been thrown about, Alex.
You've had a lot of dance partners.
Yeah, you're my third step host in 3 weeks.
Right.
So
people might begin to talk.
Yeah.
Thinking about a bit. Have we heard from Baz, actually, just before we dive into all things? How's he getting on down under?
I'm trying not to keep in touch with him.
Good.
Because he's having such a good time.
Yeah.
Sickeningly good time. He's loving it. He was in Doha. He's in Australia, and I'm looking forward to getting him back.
Quite
back on the sofa.
Yeah, exactly. Back to doing what he does best. And how are you? I'm fascinated with what you were doing last night. Before we get into the rugby.
Yeah, I was at Kevin Bridges last night.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's a pro. He was brilliant. He's good stuff. Fairly derogatory. Abusive. Good fun.
Solid Sunday night humour.
Yeah.
It is very nice to be here. And we've got a lot to talk about on today's show. Obviously, a lot going on over the course of the weekend. We're going to be tucking into Ireland, who beat Argentina. Obviously, losing Sean O'Brien and Robbie Henshaw in the warm-up, which is a huge shame. The big question in these parts, as you will well know, is Conor Murray going to make a miraculous comeback to face the All Blacks? And we'll be diving into all of those details. We're also going to be giving you details of a very special House of Rugby bonus episode. You've been busy. You've been catching up with the new BFFs forever. Brian O'Driscoll and Tana Umang. I would love to have been a fly on the wall for that interview. And our first ever live show is this Wednesday, and you can watch it live. More on that a little bit later on as well. But there is only one place to start, and we called you the professor. Your oracle-itis, calling out Will Addison as your hot top tip for the weekend. A, how pleased were you to see him go well? And B, what did you make of his performance in pretty trying circumstances?
Tough. Trying not just for the fact that the Argentina were just coming up 100 miles an hour, just looking to smash people left, right and centre and getting a lot of joy in that, but having probably not had that many reps in the team and training, just going straight in after the warm up, and I thought he did a really good job. I think he did exactly the same kind of job he's been doing for Ulster. I think he could equally slot in at 15 or 13, so he can contribute a bit there. But we talked about how people just need to get a little bit of luck, you know, just a little bit of a break early on, and that could be the little bit of luck. Obviously, it seemed strange to call it luck. It was Henshaw's, you know, hamstrings tightened up, but he gets it from his point of view, just gets the nod, and I think he took his opportunity. I thought he was really good.
Did you ever have a circumstance in your career where you were thrown in like that? I don't know how long you had, half an hour's notice? Did you ever have, and I'm fascinated to know what the psychology is like, at having to switch on and play 20 minutes after being told that this is it, you're on?
I was saying, I'm going to contradict myself there, because I was saying how it's actually quite difficult if you haven't had the prep, but in some ways you skip all the nervous energy on match day. You're going as 24th man, you're kind of just going on as a spectator, and you're kind of relaxed, you're looking out the window, looking at the supporters, the crowd, getting the boys up for it, and you're just there. It's fine, it's enjoyable, there's no stress, and then you go in, so you skip all that, and by the time you're on the pitch, there's no stress energy anyway, because you're already kind of distracted with the game. I've done that just before the World Cup in 2007. We were in Scotland playing a pre-World Cup friendly, and I was running around with boys' tickets, running around to the ticket office and catching up with supporters, you know, mum, dad and everyone. And then what happened? Shane Horgan went down injured in the warm-up, and then I had to start warming up. And then not only that, I was on the bench, and then I got brought in. Someone got injured 20 minutes in the game.
Was that the Jordan Murphy? Did he break his leg in that one? Was that before 03?
It wasn't Jordan Murphy. Jordan Murphy got done.
That was a World Cup warm-up game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think that was Probables versus Possible.
Okay, right.
That old school, that.
Yeah, I was delving back into that. Because the other thing I was thinking, it's almost like the beat of the butterfly's wing, isn't it? Like with Heaslip going down in the warm-up pre-England last year, Armani comes on and ends up captaining the Lions 4 months later in the first test. I mean, it's obviously a huge leap to make for someone like Will Addison, but do you feel he's taken his chance now and has sort of really given himself a proper shot in this squad?
Yeah, I think so. And the thing about Will, and I have like a real affinity with him for some reason, even though I've never met him before, but just I feel like I've just been there watching Ulster as a very close to the club.
Yeah.
Kind of there doing commentating and stuff, and I just feel like I've seen him come through, and there's been a lot of chat about him, and you can see him in his leadership role as well with Ulster. I think there's a few young fellas there and he kind of takes them under his wing, and he just looks like he's the one calling the shots. And it's very similar to the way Jared Payne got on.
Yeah.
Whenever he came in covering 15, covering 13, and he comes in and he just, a backline runs smoother with Jared, and a backline certainly runs smoother with Will as well. I thought he looked really comfortable out there. It just looks like he's kind of been there for years.
Yeah.
I think Joe will love that. Love the way he slotted in just seamlessly.
A few other reflections on Saturday against Argentina. What did you make of the performance overall? What caught your eye and where needs a bit of polish?
It was just a little bit rusty. I thought there was a few drop balls, a few penalties given away unnecessarily, and it's very, very unlike a Schmidt team to do both those things.
Yeah.
The signature of a Joe Schmidt coach side is when they have the ball, they're stingy with it. They never cough it up. They get into the green zone. They score points. And there were elements of that, and some of their phase play looked really slick. It looks like it's just got the potential to turn the corner, hopefully just in time next weekend for New Zealand.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely one or two things, just little things to tidy up on. A couple of offloads just went for that just wouldn't be typical of that kind of approach. A couple of drop balls in contact. It was strange to see that, but this is a side that haven't played together since Australia. I don't know how many months ago now. So I'd say they'll sort a lot out, and they'll address that early on in the week, and then they'll get ready for All Blacks.
Okay, so we've given you credit, obviously, for your soothsayer tip, which was Will Addison. We're just going to start with a gentle loosener as we move things forwards. Your top tip this week, will Ireland beat the All Blacks?
Will they beat the All Blacks?
Put you on the spot,
yeah.
Nail you down. Can Ireland beat the All Blacks? I mean, how do you see it coming in?
The psychology's just shifted slightly. Once you beat them once, then it's always an opportunity, or there's always the potential of beating them again. And I think, obviously, England, it just unraveled a little bit for England, and they got chinned at the end. And that happens teams time and time again. It happened to South Africa, it happened to Ireland back in 2013.
Yeah.
And it just, I think it's the psychology of New Zealand and the team they're playing. If you're ahead, just there's this kind of tendency just to tighten up. They know they're probably going to get back into it because they're winners. Ireland know, England know, whoever it is playing them know. Please keep doing what you're doing. And if you don't keep doing what you're doing, you're going to get chinned.
Yeah.
And there's this.
It's that fear. It's the desperation for the final whistle. Is that something as a player that you sort of, it manifests itself whilst playing?
It's counterintuitive though. If you're desperate for the final whistle, then you kind of you turn it into a bit of a slog and you kind of shut up shop. And if you do that, it's game over. If you just put it out, they get possession back. If you need to hold on to ball, because if you just kick it back to them, they'll put you under pressure with their counterattack, and they'll get back into it. They'll get their tails up, and then you'll see it from their body language. Oh no,
yeah,
it's happening again.
Here we go again.
Yeah. And you just have to keep playing. You just have to keep kind of doing what feels a little bit unnatural when you're playing the All Blacks. But that mindset, I think, has just shifted a little bit. Ireland feel like they can play. I think they tried to play a lot of rugby at the weekend, maybe once or twice too much rugby, but they'll need that mindset going into the All Blacks game. There was a few things about Ireland's phase play looked really, really sharp as well. They look like they've introduced this little circle pass. Typically it's you hit the middle forward and he kind of goes out the back to a back, and then they've got plays off that, or that little Leinster play where Sexton gets it on the wraparound, that kind of stuff. But they've just introduced this little circle ball which allows the back receiving that pass to stay really tucked, because Argentina just looked like they were going to try and smash boys. They just wanted to get up off the line. Lavanini was ending boys. Tag Furlong got hit really hard. CJ Stander got hit hard. These boys, this never happens to them.
Yeah.
And then once they get in the wider channels, then I think just it was really clever. It was nice to see Ireland just staying tucked, looking after each other, and then getting the edge, the space in the edge. And I think they're going to need that going into the All Blacks.
It's a brilliant answer. I'm not exactly sure that you've nailed your colours to the mast with the question, will Ireland be glorious? So we might come back to that a little bit later on. But there's obviously...
Well, instead of answering your question, I'm going to ramble for 10 minutes.
It's a well-worked tactic. And it's one I've seen many times before. But there is obviously a huge question in these parts surrounding Conor Murray, who... will he play? Won't he play? Let's hear from Joe Schmidt on whether Ireland's number nine will be back in the starting lineup.
There's no compulsion for him to push himself forward or to come out and try to force himself into the frame unless he's super comfortable, because we've got three guys. Kieran Mamy did a super job. Luke came off the bench and did a good job, and John Cooney came off the bench last week and did a good job. So, the window of opportunity for us is fantastic for those guys to demonstrate they can cope at the level, and at the same time, Connor has that incredible capacity to exit us well and to give us the tempo and width of pass that makes him a world-class player. So those other guys are building toward that, and I think the best way to build toward it is to get put under pressure and, in the cauldron of test match footy and try to survive.
Well, interesting. Joe Schmidt obviously saying there that he thinks it's highly unlikely. Steve Hansen has come out subsequently and says he expects Murray to play. So mind games on both sides. And do you think it would be a wise decision to stick him straight in, or having not played a lot of rugby, it's a gamble not worth taking?
Anybody else, I would say it's probably not that wise. Just because if you haven't been exposed to that kind of level of rugby and then just straight in the deep end against the All Blacks, it's going to be a big ask, even if he's fully fit. But for Conor Murray, he's just so good and so talented, and it's such a reassuring presence to have someone like Murray in the team. Maybe up until that, I was thinking surely it can't be happening. And then Joe kind of seems to suggest that he's fit and he's good to go, and if he feels ready to go, almost like he'll say.
Well, that's a ridiculous question to ask a player, though, isn't it? If you feel, there's no way Murray would say no for a game like this.
Yeah,
is that I presume that's the mentality, isn't it?
I would have thought so.
Unless he's not right.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. It's one of those.
But if Joe Schmidt came to you and said, "Are you good to go? It's New Zealand on Saturday," you'd take whatever you need to go, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I think he's saying that physically he's fine. It's just he feels like he might not just be that sharp.
Okay.
I think that's what he's saying.
We shall see.
Anyway, so this discussion here is like we're confusing each other.
Yeah.
And Hansen's just gone, I'm not buying any of it. We think he's playing. Okay. Which I think is probably quite a sensible approach.
I remember talking last season, I can't remember specifically the game, but there is something about Irish rugby where players take a long break out, come back immediately and deliver immediately. And I'm fascinated to know what it is about the setup and the system that enables a player to stick their boots back on and hit optimum form from the off, whereas elsewhere it sort of seems like it takes 3, 4, 5 games to get going again. Why is that?
Yeah, I know. You see that happen a lot. A good example of that was probably last season, Six Nations. Bundy Aki and Henshaw started in the centre. Henshaw got injured. Then Chris Farrell came in. Chris Farrell got injured, and he played well straight away.
Yeah.
And then Gary Ringrose came in, having not played.
It was Gary Ringrose.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Against Scotland.
Yeah.
And he looked so sharp.
But what is it about the system that enables that to be the case time and time again?
The preparation's just so thorough.
Yeah.
I think Rory Best, another good example of that. Typically, he comes in, and when he's in that environment, he thrives, and there's so much. Everybody's so thorough. Everybody knows their role. Everybody knows exactly what they have to do to execute. And I think they just kind of... It kind of breeds confidence in each other and breeds confidence in just real simplicity. I have to do this. I'm going to rep it and rep it and rep it, and I'm going to execute.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of almost they know they're going to perform. They know exactly what role they're going to execute, rather than just hoping they turn up and kind of leaving it reliant on skill or reliant on ability. They just rehearse stuff meticulously, and they almost kind of create a science of performance rather than like a superstitious, I'm a match day, let's see how we go.
Yeah.
That kind of approach.
It certainly works, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's time and time again, you see guys coming in there and just thriving. Players get better under Joe Schmidt.
Yeah.
And teams get better, they keep performing.
Should we pick through some of the good bits and the bad bits from Saturday? I mean, first up, three things that caught the eye, real positives for you at the Aviva.
That little phase play, I think is quite a positive. I thought it just looks really sharp. I think it's really streetwise to kind of hold your depth and keep tucked in and just be able to cope with line speed, and it frustrates defenses as well. So that's a positive, and that's a real step up. I think that I haven't seen that before. I thought centre partnership went pretty well. Will yeah. Addison, a big impression. I thought him and Bundy Akie played well together. Stockdale went well. There's probably a few negatives as well in terms of obviously Sean O'Brien, broken yeah. arm.
You've got to have a huge amount of sympathy for him, haven't you?
I think the whole stadium just groaned. Yeah. Here we go, because he's so important. Well, actually, it was a negative and a positive in a sense, because Dan Levy, strangely, he was so good last season for Ireland. So good.
Yeah.
We never would have found out how good he was had Van der Vlier not picked up that knock in Paris.
Yeah.
Then Dan Levy comes in and he was just incredible all the rest of the season. And then somehow over the summer, everybody starts talking about Josh again. Everybody starts talking about Shawnee again. Rightly so, because yep. they're incredible performers. But then Dan Levy almost seems to have got forgotten a little bit by everybody apart from Joe. He puts him on the bench. He gets his opportunity. And he was class off the bench.
Yeah.
He was brilliant. He makes the team tick.
Would you start him on Saturday? Would you go back to Van der Vlier? Jordy Murphy, potentially. I mean, yeah, there's so much talent in that area. But where would you go on Saturday?
We've had this conversation a couple of times on the podcast about second row. There's a bit of a debate, second row, back row, centres, full back as well. And we've sort of gone, we've got to the point where I think that I would go with him, but if you go with him or him, we'll
yeah.
be fine.
Yeah, exactly. You're picking from riches, aren't
we'll
you?
We'll be fine, yeah. yeah. They're only just like slightly differing levels of brilliant performance. So for me, Dan Levy, I think, is leading the way. I don't think he can be dropped after the way he played at the weekend.
Yeah.
Again, Josh van der Vlier could come in. He's been playing really well since he came back after his ACL with Leinster. He could come in and do a brilliant job. Jordy Murphy, same. But I think Dan Levy needs to play, probably.
James Ryan, another guy who, and it was interesting, I was thinking on the plane on the way over, how Maratoge was very hyped from a young age and is sort of fighting to live up to it. Uh-huh. Whereas James Ryan, watched a lot of him for sort of coming through for Leinster and Ireland under 20s, but sort of now seems to be overperforming relative yeah. to the sort of reputation that perhaps he was given as a young age. I mean, hugely talented, but is he fighting his way towards one of the best second rows in the world right now? Ritalik and Wylock are obviously probably in pole, but he's yeah. surely closing the gap.
He's going the right direction, all right. Again, second row, he needs to be playing well because there's so much competition yeah. there. Tag Byrne went unbelievably well in Chicago against Italy. Dev went well, shored up the line out of the weekend. I thought Hendy and Henderson went well too. I think there's a lot of quality there. Again, it's another one of, listen, pick who you want, will be grand in the second row.
Yeah.
But yeah, James Ryan, he's just, as you say, the Mario Itoje comparison's interesting, and I think he's been really talked about. And he, as you say, he's talked about before the game, and then he just seems to be fulfilling that potential.
Yeah.
Which is, as a young fella, he seems to be kind of really developing that leadership as well. It's good to see.
Yeah, body bull. I'd never heard that expression before. That's Joe. That, yeah, but that's the rolling on the ground.
That's etched in my head.
Is it really?
Volleyball, yeah.
I'd never heard that before. It's fascinating, though. Yeah. He seems to be pretty prolific at it. Just a couple of, we sort of touched on it earlier, but just a couple of, perhaps not negatives, but areas that Joe will have popped into his notebook and said, right, we need a bit of extra polish on this week.
Penalty count.
Yeah.
I think it's just strange to see an Irish side kind of give away so many penalties. I don't know what the penalty count was, but it just looked like we were unnecessarily giving away the occasional soft penalty. And just coughed up the ball a little bit, yeah. a little bit inaccurate. Defensively, I thought we were pretty sound. A few big, heavy Argentinian ball carriers. I think we looked reasonably sound. Scrum was very good. Line-out was fairly good as well at times.
Recovered well, didn't it?
It did. It recovered well, yeah. I think if there was one or two scrums and one or two line-outs where they got good ball, and if they got access in their first phase, yeah. then Ireland are chasing their tail.
Yeah.
Whereas if you kind of stem that, either make the ball a little bit untidy, as we did at a couple of scrums, a couple of lineouts, then they don't get the ascendancy that first phase. They don't get over the gain line, and then Argentina just got really narrow, and then they just said, right, let's put it up in the air. They got a bit of joy there actually in the air yeah. as well.
Talking of that, Carney, do we know whether he'll be fit or is he definitely out?
And I don't know. I'm not sure he got as much. There wasn't as much chat about him yeah. as there was about Murray.
Would you go, if he is fit, would you stick with Jordan Lahma, or would you bring back a man who has scored against the All Blacks before and it's just the rock at the back?
I think he's the guy who's been there, done that before, and he's a guy, he's similar to Sexton and Murray. He's a guy who's, you look around, you see Rob Kearney in your team, especially in a big game like that.
Yeah.
And I think you'd be pretty relieved to have him out there.
Well, from a man who was safe as houses at the back to a man who was pretty safe as houses at 10 as well. Coming up, we'll obviously debate a few more of the big selection debates ahead of the All Black game, and we'll reveal our Maid of More player of the weekend. But, as we were saying, earlier this month, Guinness announced their campaign, hashtag Answer Ireland's Call, in the presence of the Irish legend that is Mr. Ronan O'Gara. We were delighted to have Rog, who dropped by for a chat, and he sat down with Pat McCarry. They got started by chatting about Ronan's first ever game against the All Blacks. That was in Carisbrook, or the House of Pain, as it was then known, and that was back in 2002. Have a little listen to this.
Yeah, it was unbelievably cold, I remember that. Mm. And John Alamo, God rest him, was playing.
Yeah.
I remember him coming at me plenty of times, trying to hang on to his bootlaces. But they had some unbelievable names in their team. Mertens was out half.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was great, even back then, playing. I think we actually, I didn't kick particularly well. It was an opportunity we had. We actually changed up defensively that time. It was a bit of a kind of a, like an Andy Farrell special.
Oh, really, yeah.
Before its time, where we kind of left the last two attackers for New Zealand and just kind of went man on and created problems for them. We couldn't win the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often over there, but it's the first test you do get a chance to beat them. But I remember it obviously now for, I suppose, in hindsight, and the fact that it was just John Lomu and his pump and playing with a different ball, a yellow luminous ball, and there was sheets of ice on the ball. It was so cold, so if you were trying to kick the ball, you had to kind of kick through the ice leather that was forming on the ball. But that's only an excuse.
Yeah.
It was a missed opportunity, but at the same time, it's a great atmosphere in the House of Pain. Great place to play rugby, and we ran them close, but back then it was probably a moral victory. Thankfully we don't do them anymore.
I was looking back at some of them, and I actually was lucky enough to live over in New Zealand for a year, and it was I just missed the Lions tour, but then was over there for I got there around September 2005, but I remember Ireland played New Zealand, and I'd moved in with a lot of Kiwi housemates, and you probably know, living over there as well, they're just so passionate about their rugby, but they're very confident in their own team as well. And Ireland were playing, you guys were playing in Lansdowne Road against them. And I think Trimble came in because Brian was still out, maybe with the shoulder as well. But that was a kind of tough day for Ireland. I think it was 45 points, to, or 40 points to 5, something like that day.
Yeah.
But
there was a few days like that, to be fair. You know, if they get more than, 10 points up on you, then their game flows.
Mm.
The trick with New Zealand is you have to try and keep it in an arm wrestle for as long as you can, and then, because they're such good athletes and they've a lot of really power players, that hopefully you can maybe question their decision making and get them into that kind of a tight scenario where they probably aren't as good as playing cup rugby as we are.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you look at their record in the World Cups and it blows everything out of the water. So, they are the standard bearers. They're the model that everyone needs to look at, and we need to admire what they do. But at the same time, has the gap closed? Yes, it most definitely has.
Yeah. I suppose, before we move on from that, then the ones that I was at those two games in Hamilton and Auckland the year after 2006, and then I was lucky enough to go over then covering it as a journalist in 2012, and that was really close as well, that Christchurch game. Is that maybe the closest you guys have pushed them?
That's the thing, as I said, if you look at it accurately, there were plenty of chances to get over the line, and tiny margins.
Yeah.
Decide these things. You look at that game in Christchurch, and it was a very dubious penalty by Nigel Owen.
Yeah.
Correct, but probably because we didn't have the reputation that we had nowadays. If that was nowadays, it's probably a penalty to us, but back then it was probably easier to penalise the weaker nation, and we were the weaker nation then, rightly so. So, that's what happens, and you just got to build up, and now Ireland are consistent that they're getting maybe the 50-50 decisions, but you've got to work to get them as well, and you've got to be highly disciplined, which this current team is. And we weren't consistent enough, probably in a lot of parts of our game to actually get over the line. But as you see, there's been gradual progression, and Joe Schmidt has taken it to a new level, and now I think Ireland can obviously think of beating this team.
Yeah, they're I suppose it's just that thing of where, again, we're saying where Barry was talking to Conor recently, and he was just saying their whole way of beating them. And I remember reading, there was a good book Donald McRae wrote, Winter Colours, and it was all about how South Africa managed to turn the All Blacks over in the late 90s, around that era when rugby had just first gone professional. And back then they'd realised you have to go out and score 3 or 4 tries against these guys, because you're not going to, as you said, those arm wrestles and those decisions that don't go with you. Ireland kind of figured that out as well. Is that the way they have to kind of maybe...
Yeah, but the game has changed, so I think everything now, you know what I mean, there was a lot of low scoring victories in the past, but you can realise now that you're going to have to score probably more than 20 points to beat them, because New Zealand are good enough to score 20 points.
Yeah.
And the pitches and the weather, the way it's refereed, it kind of favours the team in possession. So the way Ireland play, I think Ireland are so good around the ruck and are so disciplined that they will score a lot of points. So it probably comes down to, can they hold the kind of the wave of New Zealand attack? And by putting pressure on them, I think they can. And the Lions was probably a big learning point for New Zealand. I think they have a lot of respect for kind of how Northern Hemisphere teams defend. And it's, you know, I mean, there is definitely... probably more opportunities now to beat them than there has been in the past.
Is that a thing that, like, Ireland seems to have done it? Maybe Joe has brought it in as well. It's the whole, I think maybe going back to 2013 when they scored, keeping the ball in play for 2 or 3 minutes straight as well. And Ireland seems to kind of revel in this now. But Ireland and New Zealand are the two countries in the world that seem to, around half time, around the end of the game, they keep the ball in play. Is that a thing you like that they've added to their game?
Yeah, well, I think that's a, you know what I mean, great sides do, you know, that those kind of championship minutes just before half time, just after half time, the end of the game. You look at, you know, I mean, New Zealand against South Africa, that just in the last game gone by, everyone presumed the game was over.
Yeah.
I was watching the game live and thinking, geez, I've never seen this before. South Africa could beat New Zealand by 20 points. And a dead rubber involving a New Zealand defeat, it seems crazy.
Yeah.
But they have the capacity to get back into games where they seem dead and buried, and they play for that 81st minute, 87th minute, whatever is necessary. But I think that's a good team in the fact that they kind of back their system and back their process as opposed to just chasing the result.
And is that a thing that's like, is it spoken about? You know, like, you've been over there now for a season of Crusaders. Is it a thing about that? Like, do they talk about that much, keeping the ball in play?
They would definitely talk about a lot of things, but obviously it's not rocket science what they're talking about. I think there's an awful lot of buy-in from the players. Big buy-in, which is probably underappreciated when you see what that and you understand what that means. So if there's a call made, we're doing this, it's not, okay, let's have a look at this. You know, it's buy-in from the players to do it to the best of their capacity, and that's quite powerful when you're 15 fellas, I suppose, believing what, you know what I mean, 20 seconds to go, that they can get the 6 points needed to win the game.
There was, I remember, I think you were at a talk at the Aviva a couple of years ago, and you spoke about, I think it was maybe one of the first, you had the microphone and you were actually hosting a talk, and then there was a Q&A afterwards, but you spoke really well about what you kind of had to do to separate yourself as an out half and all the work you had to put in, and you were kind of saying there's many maybe Saturdays and Sundays with your family that you kind of missed out on in those early days where you had to kind of put that work in. I was kind of wondering, in a way, is that why you're kind of going off to places like France and New Zealand? You're getting to live your life a little bit now?
I don't know. I've never thought about it like that. I just think if you want to succeed at the highest level, you have to make sacrifices. So that's something I learned going on that 2001 tour from Johnny Wilkinson, I think, of all people. Just, you know what I mean, something has to give in terms of, you can't have the best of everything. You can't be out and till all hours of the night and then get up and expect to train well the next day. So you learn at an early stage that if you want to succeed, you have to probably be obsessed with it, and you have to really enjoy it, and you have to make sacrifices. And I think the teams I was in too, I was lucky in that there was other people that were of similar mindset. So it was quite an easy and hugely rewarding, I suppose, journey with the Munster and Irish team and Lions teams, because you know, when you see the ball going over, as you do in Wales, in a drop goal, in a Grand Slam game,
yeah,
that's worth everything, you know what I mean? So there's no problem staying in on a Saturday and Sunday nights when you get that kind of return. But it's the kind of, you have to build it up, and as a young player, you know what I mean, you have to enjoy it too, and you have to get out. But then as you go along, you have to understand that the body isn't capable of doing what it was able to do as a 21-year-old. So you just... But nowadays, it's become so advanced that every, I suppose, facet of the game is looked after by really good people.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it becomes not like a science, but nearly like a science. But you've got to remember that these guys aren't robots, and they'll make mistakes as well, but they have to enjoy it, Pat.
Yeah, yeah. Does, like, just from being there, like in New Zealand, I just know it's that kind of, it's just everyday conversation, you know, where we talk about the weather, yeah, we talk about rugby. Does Munster prepare you for being over at Crusaders?
Yeah, Munster was a great club when I was there, an absolutely fantastic club with great people. And I couldn't speak more highly of the Crusaders too. A lot of people would think that they're All Blacks and they're superstars. They're not. They play like superstars because they're very good players at times, if you understand me. But are very normal, very humble, you know what I mean, enjoy a few pints now and then, go for coffees, simple things, but like they're very warm people, and I connect with them, and it's a great kind of club to be in.
What's the, when you get there first, because you went over at the start, didn't you, maybe ahead at the advance party, ahead of the family, scouting out places maybe to stay, but were you brought out, like, was there, like, I think they have hangies over there, some of the locals bring you over for a bit of food, or?
Yeah, it was obviously, just a coach coming into new management teams, but you were welcome. But at the same time, it's you have to prove your worth, like in any place. So you have to go in and, you know what I mean, you don't know what the players are going to make you. That's the reality, because it happens with every coach that they come in and there's a bit of a sussing out period, and they look at you and you wonder what you're up to, or what's your message, are you clear on your message? Are you consistent with your message, and what kind of rugby sessions are you going to be doing with us? So, because, I mean, I was a player too. The players expect a lot and demand a lot, and rightly so. So you have to keep them on their toes, and you have to keep them interested and keep them stimulated, and you have to keep them really on their game. And that's a challenge with 17 players, but it's a great challenge to have. It's a great, I suppose, privilege to have.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, are they guys that kind of look after themselves a lot? Like, you know, you'd walk into a squad and they're full of All Blacks as well. Like,
but that means nothing to them. Probably, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I was at Racing and there was a lot of Lions in the squad. But these fellas have the exact same insecurities as any human being walking down the street. So if they're not playing well, they're not going to be feeling well, and they're not going to be a good person. But the trick is to try and get them to perform as best and as consistently they can. But it doesn't work as easy as that, because the opposition have all their goals to try and mess us up. And now with the Crusaders, it's, you know, I mean, champions 2 years in a row, so this year is going to be even more difficult. But that's the position you want to be in, though. You want to be the guy or the team that they're trying to knock off.
And I actually thought, from looking at, maybe, like, I wouldn't have seen every game over there, but you kind of watch a couple of the games, like, if you catch them in the mornings, and definitely the knockout stages, but it looked a little bit more comfortable for the Crusaders this year. Is that just because they're confident in themselves? Or?
Possibly, yeah. I think that's what belief gives you, that's what confidence gives you, that's what people in form, they kind of embrace the challenge, and they you know what I mean, pressure is a privilege. They kind of realise they're in a position so many other players would want to be in, and they kind of feel very comfortable in their skin, and hopefully that's from preparation. But, like, you got to prepare really well to give you that, and I think the Crusaders do that. And but you need to continue to do that. You can lose that momentum in a week, all of a sudden you have to start from scratch again. So it's a fine balancing act between confidence, overconfidence, being ready for a battle, and then also knowing that, when is the war?
There's actually, even now, like that pressure stuff at the end, and with yourself, and as you said, for win the Grand Slam, and Johnny back in France as well. I think the All Blacks got kind of nailed with that when they lost against the Springboks, that they didn't have the drop goal at the end. Is that spoken about? Would you have been in New Zealand at the time when that's happening? And is it in the media? Are they getting slammed for not going for drop goals again?
I think they were after that game. I think probably rightly so in this
regard,
because they had a number of opportunities. It wasn't just one opportunity, I think. You look at the end game for them, and they had Bowden Barrett and McKenzie, and you would have thought in a game of that magnitude that 3 points is the same as 7 points, but it's a measure of, I suppose, Bowden Barrett's mindset and the fact that I think with his capacity to beat defenders on his home pitch, he thought we can do it. And McKenzie got hit ball and all and lost the ball. But I would say after that there was probably a discussion saying we need to just win the game no matter what. Sometimes just take the drop goal option, but you know, it's just part, it's not like everyone has a bit of a weakness.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to say that about, you know what I mean, an incredible player and World Player of the Year 2 times in a row, and potentially the next World Player of the Year again, you don't know. But like, that's, it just shows, you know, that there's hope for everyone, really, in the fact that no one has everything in the game.
Yeah, it is, because like the way you defend then, if you know Barrett's not going to go for a drop goal, you defend in a whole different way. No one has to rush the line or anything. You just focus on your man as well. So
yeah, I'd say with him though, if you don't rush, he'll take
do
it.
You anyway, yeah.
But it's interesting what you say, you know what I mean? He's into, I think he's nearly at 70 caps, is
70
he?
Caps. I was only looking at it there earlier, yeah. He's 163 out of 70 games, 91.5% win percentage. So maybe he's just so used to winning, isn't he?
Well, that's the same himself and Sam Whitelock.
Yeah.
Sam Whitelock, I think, is over 100 caps now, and he was in the mid-90s for success.
Yeah.
You know, so
to kind of play like that,
it's easy for us to criticise on the couch, isn't it?
I know, yeah. I suppose there's a guy, and people are talking about, can they fit the two of them in the same team, especially when you have McKenzie as well, but can you fit Barrett and Richie Moanga in the same side as well? Do you think that's kind of possible?
Well, it's featuring recently. I think people this side of the world probably have only seen Moanga for a season or two, and he had a big day out against South Africa when he, you know, I mean, kicked the winning conversion, but also had the balls to go for a massive touch finder, one bounce. He got a great bounce, but at the same time, he still went for it. I don't know. I think Bowden Barrett is just such a good rugby player. You have to have him on the pitch.
Yeah,
you know, he's just so deadly in broken field play. His acceleration, his capacity to beat defenders is like no other player. And then, you know, I mean, I think Richie is a lot, probably more structured 10.
Yeah.
But hugely exciting and hugely powerful. Good kicker as well. And offers an awful lot, very exciting. I think his game is only going to grow and grow, and he's going to get better and better. And, you know, he's a great guy to coach.
Is there, I suppose, looking ahead to that Ireland game, is it the likes of Barrett, is it your usual suspects that Ireland have to look out for, you know, like your, if Ritalik's in there, the kind of the ball playing locks, the kind of,
it's crazy when you look at some of the highlight reels, he's up for try of the year, you know, and at the start of the clip he's turning over the ball, and at the end of the clip he's throwing a dummy and scoring.
Yeah.
You know, so the guy is a massive engine and he's a great player. But so is his partner, Sam Whitelock. I think with their quality, it's the same as Ireland, though. I think nowadays it's kind of gone. You know what I mean? Our team is probably weakened if a few guys aren't playing. But if they're all playing, who do you look out for? Because, like, there's strikers all over the pitch. That's the way it's gone. You know, I think you have to have that strong core, but also know you need the kind of outside your leaders, you need the other guys to be, you know what I mean, 90% as good as the guys that are your key leaders.
Yeah. The thing I'd probably like to finish up on then was just that I suppose it'd be great if we could beat them in Ireland, of course, you know, like what that would mean. But back in 2016 when we did get there and we eventually beat them, there's a famous picture of Pauly with Doug Howlett giving it socks up in the crowd, like, but where were you for that game? Did you watch it at home, or were you, like, can you remember much?
I was in Racing, we're playing.
Okay, yeah.
I was in the changing room with the players. I think there's a good photo of myself and Dan Carter. I think I had a bit of a slagging match with him because they were under big pressure too, in terms of, like, no one wanted to be on the first team that lost to Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, but that's been done now. But as you say, it'll be a really close game, I think, you know. And it also depends too, Pat, on weather, you know. If it's going to be a really greasy ball, you have to play the conditions in that regard. If it's a dry, the Aviva is going to be a hard, good surface. But if there's dew on the pitch, it's going to be late at night too. I think we've never had a late kickoff like this. So I'd say the atmosphere will be incredible. But, you know, I think the New Zealand boys will be excited because the atmosphere will be like nothing else, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be good. And listen, hopefully we can get over
it. Yeah, I think so, yeah. It'll be very, very tight, you know. I think Ireland have a good chance, but it's the great thing about, you know, New Zealand is you just have to admire their standard bearers, and they know how to play, and I think they're very good role models as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, listen, cheers to that, Rod. Cheers for coming in and joining us here on the couch.
Thank you.
All right.
Cheers.
Well, always great to hear from Rog. Before we crack on, I want to ask you a couple of questions, actually, about how you think he's going in his coaching career. Just a couple of bits of housekeeping for you. The Answer Ireland's Call campaign celebrates the camaraderie between rugby fans by giving them a voice and rallying them to get behind the Irish team. And to encourage fans to get involved, Guinness is giving away a number of pairs of tickets to each fixture, including the massive All Blacks game at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday evening. If you want to get involved, fans should go to the Guinness Facebook page and leave their message of support using the hashtag Answer Ireland's Call to be in with a chance to win tickets to the Guinness series. And it says in asterisks, terms and conditions, of course, apply. When do they ever not? I do want to ask you about Rog, though, and just about the fact that, I mean, certainly in England, the coaches are not encouraged to go overseas. And you look at the fact he's been to Racing and then very boldly gone down to the Crusaders as well. I'd love to know your view on how he is building his coaching career and the fact he's picking up so much IP from other parts of the world.
Yes, well, there's two ways to do it. There's Leo Cullen, stay in Leinster and get a bit of support from outside and kind of learn your trade that way. And he's thriving doing it that way. Mm. Then Roger's doing it the complete opposite. Maybe like a dentist that finishes practice and then goes somewhere else to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But he's not making any mistakes. So he's
not on his home patch.
He's wasting all his good work elsewhere.
Yeah.
When he would probably like to be doing that with Munster. But I'd say he probably just thought, you know, how do I become the best coach I can possibly be? Go to Racing, play with the best players around, then go to New Zealand and play with even better players.
Yeah.
So I wonder how the conversation went with him and Jess, you know, with five kids. What say you, me, and the five kids?
Flights alone are getting sort of half his fee out there,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, but I wonder, I mean, is Rog as well thought of across the water in England as he is in Ireland?
Hugely. And in fact, interestingly, when Paul Gustard left England to go and take over at Harlequins, Stuart Barnes wrote an article saying that if Eddie Jones was looking for someone to come into his backroom team to bring real intellect, that Ronan O'Gara would be that man.
I
think he's hugely well thought of. Yeah. I mean, and there's a sort of very much on the other side of the Irish Sea, there's a real mystique around Munster, and he was so much of a part of that, obviously, that it wouldn't surprise me if an English club came calling for him at some point as well.
Yeah.
And he got the chance to do France, New Zealand, and potentially sort of a role within an English club. So he's hugely, hugely well regarded. Yeah.
He wins people over. Anybody who spends time with him, he just wins them over. Everybody loves him. Everybody loves spending time with him. He's a popular guy. He's smart. He's switched on. And he's happy to tell people they're wrong as well. So he kind of backs himself. I think as growing up as a David Humphreys fan.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I converted, right? But I equally...
and that is saying something, I presume.
Them both, yeah. And I think... a lot of Ulster guys would spend time with the Munster guys. There's always a Munster Ulster kind of affinity, especially when Leinster in the driving seat.
Right.
We just kind of just get together and slag them.
Yeah, in the backseat. I like it, yeah. Backseat driving.
Exactly. But I think Rog is unbelievably well thought of, and it's just be so interesting to see. He hinted at it, actually, when Barry interviewed him a few weeks ago. He hinted at some sort of connection with Munster again.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Watch the space. Interesting as well, he's talking about the sort of psychology of rugby down in New Zealand. You mentioned obviously the 2013 loss at the Aviva to the All Blacks, Ryan Crotty, which is a bit like saying Macbeth, I imagine, in these parts. You can't mention the name. But there was also the game in 2012, the wobbly last gasp Dan Carter drop goal. The game off the back of Chicago back in Dublin as well was a game that could have gone either way.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder... Talking about that sort of mentality, how Ireland get themselves into a position this week where they go into the game saying, we will win, not if it goes right, we might win. Do you know what I mean? The sort of slight psychological difference of that extra 10% of belief. Is that something they will work on, discuss, or is it just not really a tangible part of rugby these days?
Yeah, I think James Lowe touched on this a little bit, actually. He talked about the big difference between New Zealand and Ireland. I don't know if he's talking about between Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere in general, or just the cultural difference whenever he moved across to Leinster, was the kind of the importance of the mental skill and the mental capacity to cope with difficulties or drop balls or stuff in games, like difficult times in games.
Yeah.
And that he said in New Zealand they would spend as much time training that mental capacity as much as they would kind of physically training in the gym on the pitch. Yeah. And that, I think that's an interesting...
Was that something you had in your career? I mean, did you have triggers or things that you would do during a game to get you right into the moment?
Yeah, I did. I very much, my first touch, maybe this is a reflection of how mentally weak I was.
Oh, come on.
My first touch generally kind of dictated what way the game was going to go for me.
Really?
Yeah, if I had a positive first touch, I was off and it was going well and I could cope with anything. And then if it didn't go so well, then I would almost, you'd almost try and make up for that a little bit. And again, just being in a Schmidt environment where everything's pragmatic and everything's, the approach is if I practice this, I'll get better at that, I'll be able to execute that, and the next play is the most important play, so get back on track. So that helped me cope with that a little bit, and I think a lot of what you can see that within the mindset. Certainly we had that mindset in Chicago a couple of years ago when we were successful. But that's really tough to get that, because you really do have to train that. You have to trick yourself into being next play right, be positive, even though you're just feeling like, oh, that mistake is dragging me down, it's a bit of a stain on my performance today.
Yeah, you did play in that game in Chicago, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
I'm joking. I'm getting into you. All the notes I sent through this week were you in bold saying, tell us about the time that you played
honestly
in Chicago.
We've talked about it so much. Yeah. And I think people are really rolling their eyes. They're fed up listening to me.
Not often anyone beats the All Blacks in this pod, but I would cling on to it if I were you. Okay, still to come, we'll look ahead to that massive All Blacks game in our House of Rugby roundup. But first of all, if you haven't already clicked subscribe to the podcast or via the YouTube channel, please do it now. There's a very special House of Rugby bonus episode on the way tomorrow. And Trimby, you have been brokering important peace deals. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Yeah, the Good Friday.
Yeah, keep it light.
So I got a call there on Wednesday of last week, and then it was producer here, and he goes, Trimby, listen, I've got something for you here. Umanga and O'Driscoll are coming in on Friday. Do you want to come in and interview them? I went, absolutely, yes. That sounds brilliant. So this is my first interview, Alex.
How did it go? We won't talk about the content because we're going to save the big story for obviously the bonus episode. But as an experience for you, rocketing as a journalist, I mean, that is in at the deep end to say the least.
I'm adamant I'm still one of the boys. I'm not a journalist.
Yeah, you're being moved out slowly.
Yeah. It was brilliant. Really, well, it was a great experience. Obviously, that's a fairly unique one as well. Getting the chance to chat to those two fellas, and then
how did you find it interviewing Bod, who've obviously you've lined up alongside and had some many great days as a player with?
It was a nice contrast because I know Brian well, so we'd be able to have a bit of chat, and I haven't seen him in a while as well. So again, I've found since I've retired that whenever you bump into guys you used to play with, it's very nostalgic, and it's very like, oh, do you remember back in the day?
Really?
You were sharing stories. So there's a bit of that and a good bit of crack actually, and a good few memories kind of being recounted. And then Tana, I was just so interested to find out about his perspective on things and just what he thinks about things and what he thinks about Ireland, I suppose. Looking forward to the game this weekend. But he was such a presence. He was like physically, obviously, a presence, but even more than that. Earlier on in the day, one of the guys, the media guys, came in and told us a story about how a girl was like taking a picture of him from the corner. You know, and one of those ones that he knows is going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And she wasn't even a rugby supporter. She didn't even know who he was, but
really?
She knew there's a presence about this guy. He must be famous. So
wow.
So she's like texting her boyfriend asking, who's this guy?
and lo and behold, it was the great Tyler. I know this is very, very juicy. We won't spoil too much more of it. We'll obviously let that be released in due course. But well done. That is very much into the Lion's Den. And of course, if that wasn't enough bonus content, we've got our first ever Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby live this Wednesday at the Guinness Open Gate Brewery. Comrade Smith, James Lowe, Trimby, you're also getting very involved in that. Lots more to come on that as well. And the whole show will be live on Joe's Facebook page and Twitter account from 8 o'clock this Wednesday. So don't miss that. And we are back after this.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Well, that was nice and quick. We've played musical chairs in the intervening moments, and we're joined on the couch by Sports Joe's Pat McCarran. Good to see you. How are you?
Good, thanks, yeah.
Good, we've got a few bits and bobs to talk about. Some of the rugby stories that perhaps we might have missed. We sort of lightly brushed on to the line-out problems, but you were there on Saturday, and I think Rory Best went into a bit more detail about some of the issues. Is that right?
Yeah, we asked him about it afterwards, because it's...
having seen what Brodie Retallick did to the English line-out, in the, especially in the second half of the game in Twickenham, the big worry then is the line-out, and you need that as a kind of platform to go well. So Rory Best was asked about that, and he spoke a little bit about it after the game. I think we can hear it now.
Yeah, I think when we saw their team, they picked 3 second rows and kind of felt that they were going to target that, and they were moving around and guessing a wee bit. And when a team does that, sometimes, you know, with your process, they guess right. There's a few that they guessed, and a wee bit obviously disappointed with that. Having said that, then we got ourselves back together again and won a few scrappily, and sometimes you just have to get the ball back. But I think we'll be better for tonight. You know, just a little bit of that cohesion in the line-out.
So Rory Best obviously saying that they hope to be a little bit better against the All Blacks, and they will need to be, as you've mentioned already, given what the All Black line-out did to England. With that in mind, what combination would you go with in the second row for Ireland?
For me, he's a guy. I think they were trying to see if they could cope without him, and they couldn't at the weekend. Devin Toner. So I'd bring Devin Toner back in. Things just got so much better when he came in. It was just, and he even disrupted the Argentinian line out. I think Peter O'Mahony got a steal because he didn't want to throw to the back.
Yeah,
after Toner was. So I would bring Toner back in, and I'd pair him with James Ryan, which is kind of bad news for Ian Henderson, who played well around the pitch. But maybe you want this line out to work, I'd get Toner in. I don't know if you'd think the same, Andrew. Or
There's just so much competition there at the minute, and obviously Tadhg Byrne, it's weird having seen him go so well in Chicago that he's not still in the conversation. But again, I thought Ian Henderson went really well, but as you said, you need to get that line out sorted. Dev did really well when he came on. This could change if you play the All Blacks every weekend. This could change every single weekend, but this is the big one. You need to get it right.
You said as you were walking home from the Aviva that you caught the last 10 minutes of the England game and the cheer went up for the All Blacks.
For the All Blacks, yeah.
Something's never changed.
Yeah, it's nice to see the All Blacks get beat, but just not by England.
Right, good. I feel very welcome. Thank you for having me. In terms of the game itself, what did you pick out from that All Black win?
It was funny actually looking at the stats there from the first half, because like England just absolutely tore into them at the start, and thought Ben Youngs was class, and his pass for the Ashton try at the start was brilliant, like just cutting out a few of them as well. But the fact that they conceded those scores before the first half ended was just so crucial, wasn't it? Like, and it maybe again, like England, they're probably the same as Ireland. They're so used to the All Blacks climbing back into games. Like, so those couple of scores before halftime really made a difference. But the big one was Barrett all of a sudden pulling a drop goal out of nowhere. Waited 70 odd.
First test, yeah.
Yeah. and they'd got criticised. They didn't do it against South Africa. So same as Dan Carter in the past, they've been criticised for not doing drop goals. So he's added that now. So that's more reason to worry at the weekend. And as you said, Crotty came on and made a bit of a difference as well. So
and the offside was fair enough, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, completely. Yeah, that was 100% the right call.
Why doesn't that surprise me? Yeah. I'd love to have seen if that had been at the Aviva this Saturday, and there's a similar incident.
We're not even debating it.
Okay, I'll give you that. But what was interesting about that incident is how many sort of talking points it threw up, because obviously the ruck law has now changed. It's now when the scrum half plays the ball, not when they've got their hands on it. And what was really interesting is that last Saturday was the first time that the TMO was meant to go with the only in clear and obvious circumstances to overrule the referee as opposed to give their view. And so there were a lot of sort of moving parts to it. I don't dispute England were lucky to beat South Africa and possibly unlucky to lose New Zealand. There's all swings and roundabouts. But just on that, the sort of the debating points, are you enjoying the fact that at the moment, you know, the Farrell tackle from the weekend before, there are so many talking points in the game right now? Is that a good thing? Or is it a bit of a cloud?
The clear and obvious thing. It seems strange to allow the team to come in if it's clear and obvious, but if it's just a little bit clear, not that clear, but that's what you think, don't come in.
Yeah.
So where's the line where you make a decision on it? Nigel Owens in the Ulster Racing game in Paris said, I think the TMO, or he looked at the video, and he saw something, and I forget technically exactly what it was or where he's allowed to come in. And he said, fellas, I'm going to make the right rugby decision here.
Yeah.
And again, Nigel Owens, how many times, every time he refs, someone says, sensible decision.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He uses a bit of common sense. Yeah. And there, I think, was a good example of it. And to be fair, the decision was right, but maybe, as you said, it shouldn't have been.
Shouldn't have got to that.
Yeah, yeah. It's I don't know, you could debate it all day, but think probably the outcome's correct.
What will Joe Schmidt have taken from England's performance that perhaps might be of use?
I suppose it is like the fact that they were able to get down the outside of them was kind of interesting as well. And the fact that you have the likes of Earls and Stockdale then give them a one-on-one with somebody, and maybe there is kind of, because like Rico, like Aone is kind of like a great attacking player, but that's a weakness in defence for them as well. So maybe that's something that could be targeted. And then if something Schmidt spoke about after the game, I know Jordan Larmour didn't have the greatest of games under the high ball, but the fact that England targeted Damien McKenzie as well under the high ball, so expect a few Johnny Sexton to stick some up into the sky at the weekend. And if McKenzie's fullback, they're going to come after him, I'd say.
Yeah. Do you think the All Blacks will be better for having been put through the ringer against England, or do you think England have taken something out of them which will give Ireland an advantage?
No, I think they've got a bit of a wake up call.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think Ireland will be better off after that. I think if it had been just really plain sailing, New Zealand just get into third gear and just put them away out of sight, then I think that would look handy for Ireland this weekend. But they're not reactionary either, but they're a side that if they feel like they've underperformed, they get a little bit of heat from home, from the press, from their coaches. And I think then that brings out the best version of New Zealand, which is slightly ominous for Ireland, but not as ominous as it might have been.
Yeah. Just give us a sense of what it will be like in the Ireland camp this week. You've been there, you've done it, as we know, against the All Blacks. Do they try very hard to keep it like any other week, or because it's New Zealand at home, is there something just a little bit extra in the waters?
I think there's probably less effort needed to make it unique or make every session kind of stand out, or there to be a vocal point of the week, because Tommy Bowe interviewed Joe Schmidt last weekend in the run-up to the Italy game. And Joe said, you know, we've got this game, that game, and he was kind of setting the scene for a few of the games, and he was saying, you know, Italy obviously and Argentina is unique, there's memories, and the Argentina played well in bits against the All Blacks, and then he says, and the All Blacks are the All Blacks.
Full stop.
There's no need to go in any more detailed description. Oh, you know, the All Blacks are good because of, you know, because of this, that, the other. They're good because everybody knows the All Blacks are the best team in the world. That's it. I think the boys would be very, very excited about that that challenge.
And just in and around, I mean, what is the sense of anticipation in the rugby community around here about this one?
Oh, it's huge.
Because it's 1-2 in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And Hansen came over. I love the All Blacks are kind of a little bit different. They know that they're a brand as well. And they take him over, and the minute they get off the plane, Hansen's doing a press conference as well. You know, you wouldn't really see Ireland do something like that. They're a little bit more guarded. But Hansen came over and teed it up perfectly for the week. He said, this is number 1 and 2 in the world. Whoever wins this is the best in the world. So as if we weren't
is
excited.
It's quite surreal to be saying that around an Ireland team. I mean, Ireland are not comfortable being ever favourite. I remember doing a Munster game last season, I think, and I can't remember who they were playing, but they were 40-1 on favourites. And the headline in the local paper still said, underdogs Munster looking to sort of overturn the odds kind of thing. Yeah. It's very natural to adopt the sort of the underdog tag here. I wonder how that sort of the prestige of moving up towards the top of the world is sitting.
I think it just sits better with Ireland. The Ireland players maybe just feeling a little bit less pressure by just talking up opposition. I think Johnny Sexton kind of summed it up in the run-up to the Wasps game. When they won, what was it, 55-0, put 50 points on them. But in the run-up to that, he said something like, last time Wasps were in town, they beat us by 30 points or 20 points or whatever. And then most people, anybody who's sensible, sort of goes, come on, Johnny.
Yeah.
Come on, you're playing Wasps here. You're the best team in Europe. You're unbeatable here. But then every night, a couple of people sort of go, oh, maybe there is a chance Wasps can beat them, or maybe there is a chance, you know, that Ireland can't cope, but this is an Ireland side that perform routinely. A couple of slip-ups, a little bit rusty the weekend, but I think we'll get back seeing this team perform unbelievably well. And I just think they'll set that scene. This is the All Blacks. This is the world number one. But what they won't talk about as much is that they're world number two.
Yeah. Our good friend Mike Tyndall had a bit to say. I know you got into that
We got carried away.
Yeah, a little bit.
We definitely
hands
got carried away.
Hands up. Poor Tins. We'll give him a chance.
We needed you to be here to balance us up a little bit.
I'm not sure I can do much of that. But the point he did make, which is very interesting, is if you give an Ireland side something to play for, and obviously you had that in Chicago with the figure of eight and for Axel, and any time there's a chance to spoil an English party, Ireland's performance levels go through the roof. I just wonder what the trigger will be this weekend. Is there anything they can use beyond just being New Zealand that just puts a little bit extra into their performance?
Yeah, I don't think there is much more to it than
it's just that it's New Zealand.
It's just the All Blacks. Yeah, and I think hopefully I'd like to think gone are the days whenever Ireland just get excited about ruining things for England.
That's a good point.
And that's a fairly unhealthy way to look at it.
Yeah, mighty effective.
We've been thriving off that for a while.
Tell me about it.
But I think it'd be nice for us just to kick on instead of dragging other teams down. Let's actually look to be top of the pile.
That's a very good response. Okay. Should we get to some of the questions that we've had in this week using hashtag AskHOR? Mm. We've put out some requests for questions via Twitter, and we've got a few interesting ones, some of the cleaner ones that have come in. The first one from Colin. We've touched on it a little bit. Who would you select in the second row and also at number eight this weekend? Who would you go with?
Yeah, I kind of got this in last night. I thought that was an interesting one. Yeah, maybe we've covered the second row, so we're okay about that. But the number eight is an interesting one, because I was saying, I was at the game, I thought CJ Stander had a decent game. I think I gave him an 8 out of 10 in the ratings, and then I got a bit of grief for giving him an 8 out of 10. And then also,
because that was high or low?
Too high, yeah. Oh, wow. And then a lot of people are saying, talking about who should start at the weekend. I would have thought Stander's nailed on for me. Like, so it's interesting to see that there's some people out there who are not happy with his game at the moment. So, like, to me, there's been no, in the last few games for Ireland, no big kind of 30-metre line break or a big crazy offload or something like that. So maybe it's something people are expecting that from a little bit, but I'd go Stander all the way.
Not
for
Conan.
No, as good as Conan is, and we've talked about him before, but for me, Stander, yeah.
Yeah, Conan was brilliant in Chicago, but I think Stander's been brilliant for Ireland at that top level, and he's been performant, and I think there's a level of trust. Joe knows what he's going to get out of him, and I think that's typically good execution, good performance. I think you go with Stander.
Okay. Question two from Peter. Who'll start at fullback against the All Blacks if Rob Kearney doesn't play? And we've touched on it, and you also picked up, you know, Jordan Lahma perhaps not having his finest game under the high ball. We know what he can do going forwards. Would you go Lahma again? Or would you...
You could go Lahma. You could go Will Addison.
Yeah.
Or you could go Andrew Conway.
Yes.
I think it's one of those three.
Would you go with?
I'm going to go with Will Addison.
Will you?
Actually, yeah. If Gary... no.
So what would you say?
To be fair, the last few weeks, we've been Will Addison this, that,
absolutely.
So, yeah.
So you'd go with... And what would your centre combination be then?
Is Ringrose fit?
Yeah,
he's looking close to it,
I think Joe was saying he's going to train. They expect him to train fully now at the start of the week. So.
Well, Henshaw could be fit as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I think if whatever one of those two's fit, you go with Bundy and that other one.
Okay.
And then Addison at fullback.
And Lahma on the bench to wreak havoc in the final quarter.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. And Donal, question three, says, are players told specifically not to show the full hand in terms of set plays and patterns when you play the likes of Italy and Argentina ahead of a team like New Zealand? If so, how difficult is that? And if the performance leads to some criticism, how annoying is it? So do you ever go into games sort of chucking away your aces and your kings and your queens and jacks and just playing with 1 to 10?
Not really, because there's some plays that Joe brings in that you could watch that 10 times. You could watch Ireland execute that and you think, right, okay, we'll try and do this, that, the other. And they're undefendable. If everybody does what they're supposed to do, the play is undefendable. And what we used to say when we were playing Leinster, again, a big Schmidt stamp there, if you're being like taken out long in the rock, or you're being just held back or bumped, or if you think they're up to something, they are. And whatever play you've seen in the week before, it's likely they'll get into the meeting and they'll say, listen, we did this option off that, why don't we do this option instead?
Right.
And I think just doing your research and doing your video analysis can almost trick you into anticipating what you saw the previous week.
Right.
And that's what they want you to know.
the double bluff.
Exactly, yeah. So I think there's a lot of that going on. I think they can set up a couple of things one week that they use to exploit the next week.
He is the master, though, of the setup, Joe Schmidt. Do you think he will have something up his sleeve this week that we haven't perhaps seen?
Yeah, he loves. He'll have targeted something, and even actually, we had Jenny Murphy in last week, and she was just talking about how encyclopedic his mind is, and how he's 8-9 phases ahead of everybody else. So he'll have spotted something, I'm sure, in the last couple of games. Maybe even the Rugby Championship. Maybe even in game one of the Rugby Championship, where there's a weakness somewhere. So he'll have something planned for them. I expect the ball to be up in the air a good bit as well, and because he was almost talking Jacob Stockdale up at the end of the game, talked about how high he got up, and hopefully that gives him confidence to do it a bit more. So expect the ball to go up in the air.
Yeah, he talked about how Argentina went up with one hand as a winger. When if I was receiving a kick, a high ball, and someone went up with one hand, I feel like they're cheating, right? Because I can't catch it now because I can't get up. Joe called it the cradle. I can't get up there with my elbows because he's going to get higher with his hand, but he can't catch it with one hand. So if he's going to ruin his chances, he's also ruining mine, so no one's going to catch it.
No.
But Jacob is one of the guys who, he's so powerful, he's so lean and tall and kind of rangy that he can get in the air and he can compete really well. I think it'll be a real strength for Ireland if that kind of bombardment, that aerial bombardment comes our way.
Yeah.
Do we know what the weather's going to do, Viva?
No,
does it matter? I mean, England, it certainly helped England in terms of the arm wrestle. I just wonder whether Ireland will want it dry or...
I think they would, yeah. I think they would want it dry, yeah. To kind of, they'll have stuff in their mind that they want as well. And it was a funny one. I think somebody asked Kieran Marmion at the weekend. Myself and Andrew were listening to it and they were saying, are the All Blacks, you know, would they be ready for rain? Like, and it's like, yeah.
I think it rains down there every so often, there, yeah. About 9 months of the year.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think... From a spectacle point of view, I know it looked class at the weekend in England, but I hope it stays dry anyway.
Come on then, the soothsayer.
What am I going to predict with the weather?
Another prediction. No, not the weather. I'd like a score.
I'm going to have to go... I'm going to have to be very patriotic and go with Ireland by a point.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you take along with that?
Yeah, I'll happily go along. I think this is a good chance to do it. And the All Blacks haven't looked amazing as well. Like, you know, but they don't have to look amazing to win games. But I think this could be the first one we get win at home against them.
Do you actually believe that? I'm kind of just going along with it. I'm happy.
You're being sucked into the hype.
I'm happy to be carried away. I'm enjoying being carried away.
It's fun to dream, isn't
this
it?
This is always, on a Monday. I'm always very confident. It's always when I get to Saturday, then I'll just completely bottle it and then just kind of just put out a tweet before the game, going, "They're going to lose this," just to kind of cover myself. Yeah. Like,
I'm going to do that very English thing and say, "I hope Ireland win," which is in stark contrast to everyone that was celebrating in your pub off the back of Saturday's result. Hopefully. We've enjoyed the tango enough to come back, for me to come back next week.
I think it'd be great to have you back. You've done enough.
That's very kind. Work experience pays off. Listen, it's been really good fun. Enjoyed it enormously. Thank you very much indeed as well. To Pat, thank you very much indeed to everyone as well for all your comments, your questions, for listening and for watching us on YouTube too. If you are enjoying the show, one more quick reminder, please do subscribe and leave us a generous comment as well. All appreciated. A big thank you to everyone who's been involved in making the show this week. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with our friends at Guinness. Enjoy the game on Saturday and we'll debrief early next week. Bye for now.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.